Broadcasting from the Tazzin Lake Lodge Studio, this is Sporting Journal Radio. Presented by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX. Now here's your host, Brett Amundson.
That's right. Thank you for tuning in on this station right here. By demand, SportingJournalRadio.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, or maybe you're watching this on our Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram channel. Thank you very much. Dan Amundson is joining us as well, and we have got a huge show for you. What's it like to save your fishing camp from many wildfires, not just one, but wildfires from each direction? We'll ask Trevor Montgomery, and we'll also talk about Tazzin TV with him and Barry Prawl. Garrett Sveer will join us in just 1 second to talk about these new little plastics that he's been trolling for crappies with and finding a lot of success. How's he doing it? What are they? We'll find out here in just a minute. Joe Henry will talk about a recent tournament on Lake of the Woods and how well some of those anglers did up there. Really well, just to give you a little heads up. And then there's a big youth outdoor activity day taking place in Alexandria. Dean Krebs will join us once again to tell us all about it and why you should go. It's free. This week's show is brought to you by OnX. Know where you stand with OnX. It's brought to you by Prairie Sportsman. Get your favorite shows from Prairie Sportsman at prairiesportsman.org, or you can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, etc. It's brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. Plan a trip to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. It's brought to you by Otter Tail Lakes Country. Find out more and find your inner otter at ottertaillakescountry.com. And, of course, by our friends at Haybale Heights on Devil's Lake. Visit haybaleheights.com.
852 million acres of public land, 147 million private properties, all in the palm of your hand. The number one hunting GPS app just got better. With hundreds of custom map layers, 3D and topographic maps, you can easily scout on the road or at home before you go. And now you can get important weather details, CWD detection, and even know what crops have been planted where. Get the most trusted hunting GPS app ever made. OnX. Know where you stand with OnX.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in on this station right here by downloading the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts, or by listening on demand at sportingjournalradio.com, or maybe you're watching this wherever you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, etc. Dan Amundson is with us here too. Hey, Dan, how's it going?
Oh, doing well.
And Garrett Sveer from Slab Seeker Fishing is going to join us now on the show. Garrett, how are you doing, man?
Hey, doing good.
Have you been, I know you were busy today. Were you out on the water this morning?
Yeah, I was for sure. It's been really windy out there. And so we're kind of battling the waves today like we have been for about a week. But the fishing's been great aside from fighting some serious wind.
How sunburnt are you getting out there?
Fairly. I try to cover up. People always give me a hard time. I'll have like my sun hood on and long sleeves and long pants, you know, UV stuff. Because if you're out there every day and it, I'm not trying to tan and put baby oil on or anything like that.
I'll tell you what, I started doing that this year. I have actually got it for some of my hunting stuff. Sitka makes this core lightweight hoodie, and it's like a real thin lightweight layer that has a hood on it, and then it has a built-in mask. So all summer this year, when I was out there fishing, I had a hood up and I had a face mask on and sunglasses. I didn't have any skin exposed except for the backs of my hands mostly. So I don't care what anybody says anymore. I don't want cancer. So I like,
no, for surely not.
There it is right there. I was wearing mine.
I'll have to check that out. That's sweet.
Yeah. Mine was the camouflage one. So that was the one thing, is I would like to get it in a solid color for fishing, but I had the camel one on, the whole time. But yeah, those are pretty nice. And they're not real hot on a hot summer day out there, so they're kind of comfortable. They're kind of nice for fishing. So
they dry quick too. You know, the ones I'm wearing, I haven't worn the Sitka brand ones, but the ones I'm wearing, they dry really fast too. So if you are sweating, you're dry. Whereas like a t-shirt, you come off the water and you practically have to wring it out. You look and feel terrible because you're soaking wet from sweating too, you know?
Yeah. Well, you can see right there, the breathability on it is great. And Dan, go back up to the top of it there and show it. So like, not only did it keep me comfortable, go way all the way up to the top. Yeah, there you go. But the fish couldn't see me either. Cause it's,
cause I like it's, it. That's great.
Cause it's camouflage. See, camouflage. Yeah, no, I'm all about protecting, you know, and I don't like doing sunscreen. Cause then you're all greasy. And then when you're, you know, as a, as a fisherman, Garrett, when you're anytime you're introducing different scents to your baits, that can throw off your fishing completely. Like the same for bug spray. So I try not to use bug spray or sunscreen when I'm in the boat as much as possible because I don't want the fish.
I'm the exact same way. You know, that In Fisherman did some studies back in the 90s that they published, and you know, they tested a whole bunch of things that you might have on your hands and how fish react to them. And the two things that they were pretty definitive on that fish did not like the smell of was sunscreen and bug spray. So I'm with you. I try to avoid having those things in my boat and on my hands for sure.
Well, we had,
you know, if I do apply some to my face, I usually try to do it before I leave and then wash my hands. And, you know, instead of reapplying, I'll pull my hood up and stuff like that.
Well, I was fishing up in Saskatchewan with a buddy of mine. I'll tell this story real quick, Garrett, with Trevor. And, it was one of those nights where the big lake trout were just hungry, and there's a time of the year up there that you aim for where all the bait pods converge into this one area, and it's just underneath it is just giant arc, and we were rolling through there, and it was just one of those nights that you'll remember fishing, and the mosquitoes were getting so bad. It was dead calm, and you know, it's just perfect out there, except all the mosquitoes came in when that wind died. And we were like, nope, not doing it. We didn't have the thermocell with, and finally we put on bug spray and our night was over. It ended just like that.
Just shut it right down.
Completely done. And, so it's thermocells and it's, you know, long sleeves, face coverings, whatever, no bug spray, no sunscreen for me.
I'm with you 100%.
So fishing's been good.
Fishing has been good. You know, I got a chance to, I found these plastics online from Europe, and this one is the Tioga, and these are from Lucky John, and they're just kind of bringing these things into the United States. And what it is it's a little micro swim bait, you know, like a lot of guys use Kytex and different swim baits, but, they've never really had any little micro ones. So they're doing these little micro guys. You can see it's got a little tail on there. Yeah. Yeah, this is Green Pumpkin. And so I've been playing with some really cool baits from Europe. They use them for big perch over there, like these giant perch. And I've just been whacking crappies, trolling these things. This is another one that's really unique that I've never seen a bait like this. It's called the Alien Bug. And it's infused. They smell really strong. It's infused with a shrimp scent. So it smells like a shrimp dinner on the grill.
Is that what it
but all
like?
These little legs, you troll this, and it gets all these little legs get kicking and vibrating in the water. And so it throws off a ton of vibration. And I think it's something these crappies can feel in their lateral line. And so I've been having some pretty incredible success with some of these new, it's been kind of fun playing with these new baits from Europe that the fish haven't seen and I haven't seen.
So now what kind of jig are you putting those on? And then are you just vertically jigging them? Or are you pitching them? What are you doing with them?
You know, we've been trolling just to cover water and you know, cover ground. And so I've been trolling them at, you know, 1 to 1.3 miles per hour. As far as jig heads, I kind of switch up between like a standard ball head jig and those roadrunner jigs with a little flicker blade underneath. You know, sometimes the blade is kind of an advantage too. It seems like crappies like, you know, some flash. And so that little blade on those horse head roadrunner style jigs is pretty good some days too. But kind of depends on the mood of the fish. You know, I had some customers out the other day and they were surprised at how much color made a difference. We made just a little color change, and one guy started hooking all kinds of fish, and he got up about 10 crappies on his buddy. And then I was like, we got to get him in that same color. And, you know, we ended up, putting together some pretty big numbers once we, We ended up putting together some pretty big numbers once we got everybody dialed into the same color. But that's a great bait for trolling crappies that you have up right there. That's been my go-to the last couple of weeks.
That's a Roadrunner. What was the color? What was the color that the one guy had on that everybody switched to?
You know, I was using bright stuff in the morning, and we finally went to this one, and it's called Wakasagi, and it's kind of like a coffee color. It's a twister tail. And it was a real dark color. And, you know, we had been using bright. And the day before, the bright worked fine. But, you know, we switched to this little bit darker color. And really, so definitely play around with that, too. And they were all surprised. They're like, crappies care that much about you know, color to the next. And some days they really do. You know, we didn't move spots at all. We just came back through with the right color and we put all kinds of fish on. So that can be pretty important. You know, it's not my first, you know, typically the first thing I look at is my speed. The second thing I look at is, you know, are the fish still there in the area that we've been, you know, fishing? And then I guess, you know, color is kind of a consideration that's farther down the list. But we really noticed the importance of it the other day. So definitely keep that in mind.
So no monkey's milk or what was the other one?
You know, that hasn't been good lately. Yeah. Bobby Garland does one that's like a translucent kind of a milky white, but you can see through it. And that one's called monkey milk. That's been really good. And Bloody Minnow is always a go-to from Bobby Garland for me too. That's a green bottom and red top. And it's also translucent, you know, something that they can see light through. It seems like the translucent colors for me far out produce things that you can't see light through.
And you're mostly just covering water. It's primarily trolling right now.
Yeah, you know, the fish haven't really grouped up yet. We'll start to see that, you know, with crappies. Most people are calling me to catch crappies. And we'll start to see the fish group up a little more here once you hit about mid-September, you know, the second week of September. You'll start to see those fish really congregate. And what they're going to do is they're going to, starting probably the beginning of September, they're going to start pushing out towards those deep holes, and they're going to suspend out there. The majority of the fish are. We're going to see a lot of these weed fish get out of the weeds. And then they'll be, you know, kind of grouped together tighter. But we're finding more like loose schools right now is what makes trolling so effective, is we can hit these loose schools of fish that, you know, I'm assuming are maybe 10, 15 fish, and you can pick off some of them. And as you're trolling, if everybody in the boat hooks up, usually I'll stop and hit spot lock and we'll fan cast it and we can catch a few more. But it's not like we can spot lock and fan cast it for an hour. It's more like we'll spend another 10 minutes right there and pick off what remaining ones we can get. And then we got to go find another one of those loose, smaller schools of fish. But once you get into fall, you'll see them start to group up tighter. And then the game will change a little bit. Instead of trolling, we'll vertical jig those fish. Your electronics will play a lot bigger role. You'll want to get right over the top of them. And with the panoptics that's out there right now, it's not even fair. You know, side imaging was always kind of my friend before, where you'd cruise out there, see them on the side imaging, drag your cursor over, mark the spot where you're seeing the fish suspended on the side imaging, and then go back and get on top of them. The trick with the side imaging is that those fall crappies are easily disturbed, it seems like. So you'd pick off a few of those fish, boom, boom. And then that school would move, they'd scatter and sometimes break off into a couple even different schools of fish. And you just find yourself wondering which way they went. And you could always reconnect, but it was a time waster. So you'd have customers that would get a few fish, you know, real quick. This school would scatter and then you'd waste time kind of getting back on them. Or now with the panoptics, I've got that mounted on the front of my boat. I can slowly turn that panoptics handle and say, oh, they went, you know, 30 feet that way. We can jet over there, kind of hone in on it as I'm driving with the trolling motor spot lock right on top of them again, and there's almost no waste of time. We're right back on top of this fish. So that's made me, I mean, not that we didn't catch them before, but just more efficient in hunting them and you know, keeping people on better numbers of fish throughout the day.
How late of the season do you guide?
Through September, and then in October I actually kind of switch gears and I do steelhead. You know, and I'm missing out on some phenomenal fall crappie fishing in October, and you know, even the first couple weeks of November, it's really good.
But it's steelhead. You know, let's be honest.
But it's steelhead time, exactly. And that's something I just really love and I'm passionate about. And that's probably about my favorite thing in life. So I October 1st, I kind of shift all my focus to that, and in the fall, I guide the Brule River in Wisconsin, and then in the spring, I do the North Shore, where I grew up in Two Harbors.
Well, if people want to do some steelhead fishing with you, or if they want to try to get on some crappie trips with you, what should they do, Garrett?
Yeah, I have a website. It's slabseekerfishing.com, or I have a Facebook page, too. It's if you go to Facebook and just type in Slab Seeker Fishing, you'll see on the Facebook page, you can kind of look back and see some photos from some other trips. I actually do have some fall steelhead availability, surprisingly. Normally, I had been kind of, with COVID, we weren't able to guide a spring season, and then I rolled all those trips over. So I had been, like, you know, book solid. But this fall is the first time I have open availability for fall steelhead where I can personally take you out. I've got my nephew doing some trips for me as well, but both Mac and I have time on our schedule. So you could get on either of our schedules for fall steelhead in October this year.
SlabSeekerFishing.com. Garrett Spear, thanks for the time today on the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys. Have a good day.
You see this? This is Otter Tail County in rural Minnesota. Beautiful, right? 2,200 square miles of country land, rich with rolling farmland and more than 1,000 sparkling lakes. It's where I grew up. I loved it all.
Or I thought I did, at least what I knew about it.
Hey, my name's Corey Heppola. I'm a radio host, husband, father, and I was born and raised in Otter Tail County, Minnesota. Now, growing up, I was in such a hurry to leave that I never really got to know my home. What did I miss? What changed? I was going to find out.
All right, now it's time to talk to Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism about that big walleye factory in northern Minnesota. Joe, how you doing?
Doing good. How's it going, Brett?
I'm doing well. Sounds like anglers have been getting up to the northwest angle and finding quite a bit of fish up there. And then there was another tournament up there recently, wasn't there?
So you know what? First off, we had the Warrior Boats tournament up there. It's the David A. Anderson Memorial Shootout. It was 133 Warrior Boats went out and competed in a catch record release walleye tournament. And, you know, my goodness, if the these are some good anglers. And, you know, the winning team was actually a couple, and they went out and caught five walleyes for more than 42 pounds. That's over an 8-pound average per walleye. You know, an 8-pound walleye is a fish of a lifetime for most people. They got five of them. So, I mean, you know, just fishing's been very, very good. And the bite was even off a little bit, anglers tell me that day. So fishing's been great. You know, I can tell you, up at the northwest angle, my goodness, I mean, you know, kind of a loaded question, but, you know, what happens when you let those big, you know, walleyes, pike, muskie, smallmouth bass sit pretty much idle for 2 years, and all of a sudden you open up fishing again? Well, you can imagine, so our anglers that fish up at the northwest angle, a lot of them, if they're able to, they'll slide over the border into Ontario waters, that water that's just adjacent to the northwest angle, and it doesn't get hit hard at all, and the fishing right now is just phenomenal. They're catching so many fish and big fish, and it's just been really, really, really good.
So, can the during that Warrior tournament, was that the whole lake? Could they boat up to the angle and fish up at the angle too if they wanted to?
They could. Yep. So they could fish the Minnesota waters of the northwest angle. Yeah. Yep. Okay. And you know, I think most anglers, I'm pretty certain, fish the big basin because, you know, when you're doing a catch, record, release tournament, slots really don't matter because you can release the fish. Hence, you know, 19 and a half to 28 inch walleye you normally have to release on Lake of the Woods. That, you know, 26 inch walleye, for instance, will count because you can still, you know, get a picture of it on a bump board, hold up a hero shot for your second photo and count that 26 inch fish as scoreable, and then let that fish go immediately. And so anyway, it's a different kind of tournament. You're fishing for the largest fish in the system, a 19 inch walleye. In a keep tournament, it might be very valuable to you. But in a catch, record, release tournament, you want the biggest. So they're fishing the basin primarily. Some were pulling spinners. Really, the majority of them, I think, were pulling crankbaits on lead core.
That does change things a little bit. When you think about a lot of those tournaments, you have to fall, your fish have to fall within the legal keep limits, you know, your slot limits or whatever the case may be per lake. But when you have different rules like that, that kind of changes the game a little bit.
It totally changes the tournament, big time. And I've fished a lot of walleye tournaments, and I can tell you that, you know, when you're fishing for those fish that have to be within a certain length limit, you know, you might be fishing near shore structure. You might be fishing weeds. You might be fishing lots of different things just to catch your fish that are that right size walleye that you can actually keep. You know, when you're fishing the biggest fish of the system, you know, a lot of the fish on Lake of the Woods, the bigger walleyes, many of them are going to be offshore. And I'll tell you why. It's because on Lake of the Woods, when a walleye becomes 25 inches, a good part of its diet will start shifting over to tulipies, which are almost like a cheeseburger for a walleye. And tulipies primarily live offshore. So consequently, a lot of the big walleyes you catch are going to be offshore out in that big basin. And not that big walleyes don't eat other things, they do, but tulipies certainly are a focus for them. That's one of the reasons that a lot of the bigger fish are caught out in that no man's land out in that big basin. And so that's where most of the fishing happened for a catch, record, release tournament.
Man, you know, I had a buddy snap me from up there, one of the guides up there, and he was having shore lunch on Garden Island. And there's just something about, you know, it's just kind of a neat adventure having shore lunch up on Garden Isle. It's kind of a traditional thing up there for a lot of the guide services. You go out and you have a meal there, and they cook up some walleyes for you. And of course, you got the chance to catch the biggest walleye of your life. But just catching a bunch of eaters and having lunch on the shore, they fry it up on the beach there for you on Garden Isle. It's a pretty neat experience.
Well, that's, you know, Garden Isle for the charter boats. They also do Zippo Bay Resort. Some charters will go back to their own resorts and do a shore lunch if they're fishing close. Otherwise, for the guides up at the northwest angle, it's very traditional to stop on an island in Canada and do a shore lunch. And, you know, it's also a really neat experience. You know, part of that shore lunch is taking a break for the day. You know, the other part of it is just the batter and the tartar sauce and the way they fry their potatoes. And there's all these nuances that these guides have adapted over the years to make those fish fries so darn good. And I mean, the problem with a good shore lunch on Lake of the Woods is that it screws up any kind of fish fry you have at home ever again.
I've asked those guides before, like, how many of these fish fries have you done? You know, how many shore lunches have you done? And they can't even count that high. They've been doing them for so long, and they've got their little nuances, and you think you know how to fry fish, and then you watch one of those guides do it, you know, on the shore somewhere out in the middle of the lake, and it's like, man, I can't do this in my kitchen.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's you know, all the nuances these guys do. I mean, you know, one of the guides taught me something. He said, you know, this is how we control the temperature of a walleye. He's frying walleyes in a cast iron pan. And when the temperature gets too hot, he always has room to add a cold fillet to bring the temperature of that oil down. But so there's a lot of nuances that they do that really make those fish fries good. I'll tell you that one of the problems about a good fish fry, a good shore lunch that they do, is it screws up a fish fry you have at home ever again because they're so good.
Yeah, absolutely. Joe, I was going to tell this story. Maybe I won't tell this story. Have I ever told this, my Garden Island story before?
I don't know, but you know, we're not having a ton of charters. Was that Ballard that snapped you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was Nick.
Yeah. Well, they're the ones that mainly are going to Garden Island doing shore lunches. A lot of them aren't, so I don't want to bring it up too much.
Gotcha.
I mean, I want to appeal to the masses, you know, and there's just not a lot of charter boats doing garden lunch, shore lunch. I think they're probably one of the primary.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I was just going to talk about how I was brought to Garden Island to sleep off my sickness.
Hangover?
Well, it was motion sickness, but it was definitely,
we can talk about that. Go on.
It was definitely hangover induced motion sickness. But let's we don't have to talk about some of the border issues, but let's just mention again that you can fish across the border. Maybe just kind of repeat that it's open. So And Joe, for those guys going up to the angle, they can fish in Canadian waters again now, correct?
Yeah, it's game on, absolutely. So just like before the border closure, you know, you stay at a Northwest Angle resort, and then you know you can fish on Ontario waters. In fact, you don't have to call and check in at all. You don't have to call into CBSA and check in, as long as you're not touching land or touching a dock or doing a shore lunch or anything like that. So if you're just going to be fishing on the water, not touching land, you can go into Ontario waters, fish as long as you want, and then come back into U.S. waters and not have to check in at all. So it makes it really nice. Now, if you were going to do a shore lunch, then you'd have to call in to the 888 CanPass number and check in. And, of course, when you check in, now you got to make sure that you have your vaccination card, your COVID test that's less than 72 hours old, that sort of thing. And, of course, you would have had to have had the Arrive Can app uploaded to your smartphone. And just for listeners too, you know, that's what it takes to get into Canada now. Like, if you're going to drive to the Northwest Angle instead of boat up or take a float plane, to get that 40 miles through Canada and then enter back into the angle, you need to have the Arrive Can app with your vaccination card uploaded, as well as a PCR COVID test that's less than 72 hours old. That'll get you into Canada. And then, you know, once you get up to the Northwest Angle, you're good to go. And of course, you know, our guests have been just fine traveling back south again too. No problems there. So the big thing is that it's game on. We're able to fish Ontario waters again from the Northwest Angle, which is a big draw. You know, again, those fish haven't really seen any or very little fishing for two summers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the stories I'm hearing, Brett, are just incredible about fishing.
And when it comes to knowing what to do and what you can and can't do and how to contact people up there, all that stuff's on your website?
Yeah, you know what? Our website's a good source. Otherwise, really, the best part is to keep up to date on things. You know, Canada Border Services Agency is a really, really good source. You can certainly reach out to Lake of the Woods Tourism if you have specific questions. Otherwise, reach out to the Northwest Angler Resort that you're going to be staying, and they also are very dialed in.
That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com. And then also, you kind of keep that information coming out on your social media channels.
You know, and we do have a lot of social media channels. You know, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, it's Instagram. It's really big right now. And, of course, our YouTube channel where our videos are. But, yeah, that for real-time info, that's always another real good resource.
All right, Joe, well, if people want to plan a trip to Lake of the Woods, I got two angles going here. Look at that. If people want to plan a trip to Lake of the Woods, Joe, where should they go?
You know what? Check out our website, and that is lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Northern Minnesota's Walleye Factory is a year-round world-class fishing destination. The perfect getaway this summer is just a short drive to Lake of the Woods. Fish Big Traverse Bay, the Rainy River, or visit the unique Northwest Angle. To catch big fish, you have to go where the big fish are. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Well, there have been fires everywhere this year, and while some fires are getting under control in some areas, some fires are not. Minnesota has not been spared the wildfire situation here recently. This, as of the time of this recording, that Greenwood fire, over 3,000 acres up in northeastern Minnesota, and I think there's some other fires going on. And I've got our friends from Saskatchewan on here. I'm going to bring on Trevor Montgomery and Barry Prawl from Tazen Lake Lodge. How you guys doing?
Good, Brett.
Doing great, Brett. Thanks.
And I got me and Dan. Let's just bring all four of us on here right now and just start talking about things a little bit. And I want to talk about wildfires because for a while there, fellas, it sounded like northern Saskatchewan was just like one big fire. It sounded like the whole half of the province was on fire up there. You guys were battling. And Trevor, you actually had some up-close experiences with those fires that I want to talk about. But how many fires do you think you had up in northern Saskatchewan this year, Trevor?
I don't know exactly a number to tell you the truth, Brett, but the fire map just shows, you know, hot spots and fires everywhere if you look on that. I know in my experiences when I was up there, I could look in a 360-degree circle, and all it was smoke plumes everywhere on the horizon. So it's pretty wild. It was a wild year.
That's crazy. It sounds like, for the most part, they're out now, or do you still have fires going on?
There's still hot spots up there. We've had a bunch of rain in the north over the last couple of weeks. You know, basically what's happened now is summer's done and fall season has come. So with that, of course, often we get cooler temperatures and more moisture, and that's really helping to control a lot of these fires now. They're just hot spots, a lot of them.
So, of course, Tazen TV is going on right now. We'll talk about Tazen TV a little bit more here in a second, but both you guys are involved in Tazen Lake Lodge, of course. And then, Trevor, you have Camp Grayling now up in Stony Rapids, which is on Black Lake, and then also the Rio Lake Camp that you have, which is such a neat place over there. And you sent me a message the other day that basically said you saved that camp from burning down, or that camp was saved from burning down this year.
Yeah, we, you know, with the firefighters being so busy up in the north with so many fires, of course, they hang sprinklers and, you know, they're kind of like, well, you're kind of on your own. Let's hope it doesn't burn. So I was a little more proactive, and I bought a water pump this year, figuring that there could be some issues, and brought up a bunch of hose. And myself and another good friend of mine who was up helping me, we actioned a bunch of the fires and, you know, I guess controlled them, put them out, made sure, moved them, you know, wet down areas to keep ash and you know, anything from trying to float over. The one unique thing about our area is the peninsula where we're on. The fire run about 15 miles down the peninsula, and then it split around a hill, so it split into a number of fingers. And at one time we had fire burning on all three sides around the peninsula. And my fear was is that some ash had flowed over onto the rest of the peninsula. And the other side of camp on the peninsula, it is basically unburnt. It's never been burnt. So, you know, it is very, very mature trees and a little bit of ash in there, and there's no way we would have stopped it. So we were just very proactive trying to make sure that, you know, camp didn't burn.
That's crazy. So you had a water pump And then were you guys were just in the boat, just going up and down the shoreline fighting these fires, or explain how what you were doing exactly?
Sure. Yeah. Anything we could reach from shore, we'd pound the water to. And then after, as some of the fingers were starting to creep down the peninsula itself, we laid out hose. We had 300 feet of hose, and we laid out hose and actioned off hot spots and knocked down whatever we could for fire out of the trees and that. And it was effective, because I firmly believe that if we weren't there and didn't do that, camp would have burned. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
Man, I'm going to try to, if I can here real quick, I'm going to try to pull up. I'll come back to it, but I'm going to try to find the, I've got some pictures of the peninsula so we can kind of describe, show people what you're talking about, how to fire. Cause that had a fire actually came down that peninsula not that long ago, right?
Well, that was 10 years ago that fire came down the peninsula, but it burned fairly hot, but there was a lot of there was still a lot of fuel left over, especially is what Task Environment told me. So because all that fuel was able to creep, and then there was strips that had never burnt of green bush. So those were the main parts that were burning. When it got into the slash, it was just creeping. But in the main parts, it was throwing ash all over. And, my fear always was when we were out there is that the west wind, and we started getting a west wind gusting to 50 and, humidity in the teens or next to zero. And, it was throwing ash everywhere in explosive burning conditions. So, part of my background as resource management is I do have quite a bit of training in that. So as we sit here on that hill and look at that picture, that's all burnt.
Unreal.
Everything you see, and some of it was extremely hot where it's actually burnt right down to the sand. You can see this narrowed area as it comes down the peninsula. That is where we set up our main, defensive mode, and we wet that whole peninsula down. And then right at the close side of that narrow part is where we had sprinklers across to as well. But, that whole area to the left, to the right, and straight ahead, that was all burning all at one time. And that was our biggest fear, is just the ash coming on. Because as you can see, as you move down the peninsula, it is solid trees back through where camp is here. It's beautiful, big, mature, never burnt trees. So.
Gosh, I just can't imagine just having to be there. Explain how that works. The government will actually come in and put some sprinklers up for you.
Yes, our Forest Fire Management Center, public safety agency now they call them. They do go for protection. They protect first off lives, and then businesses, and then commercial timber is kind of how they regulate things. And in the north, they have a let it burn policy, and they just let it burn out unless it's starting to threaten any of those things. So yeah, it was some excitement. There was a couple of days where I was pretty darn worried. I thought, oh my gosh. But we had a few boats there, and we thought, well, if we have to, we'll just start loading stuff up, anything worth any value, and whatever we can, save some assets out of it at least. Because yeah, it would be terrible to have a total loss like that. And, of course, just taking it over this past winter, I sure as heck didn't want to have to start rebuilding afterwards, And that's a good picture of the rest of the peninsula right there. That's, that's mature forest, and it burned like crazy, eh?
So that part didn't burn then?
No, that's correct. Yeah, if it would have started, we would have never saved camp.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Man. Well, I'm glad you made it out of there safely, of course, obviously, and nice work saving the camp.
Well, like I say, I had to at least give it a shot. I sure as heck wasn't just going to sit back and let it burn.
Man, in that camp, we should talk about what that camp looks like right now, because that real camp obviously has been there for a while, but there's some new structures as part of that camp. That's not that old.
No, those new structures would probably be, 5-6 years old, I would think. And then what we did to prepare is we took all the tents down, because we had the tents up this year, of course. So we took all the tents down, put them away, tried to put anything flammable away in case ash started coming, and then just action the fires. And that's what we did for, basically it was a week straight. We were doing 12 to 15 hour days of just out there actioning the fires. It was pretty tough to be out on the lake and actioning fires and not have a heck of a lot of fishing time in, but we knew there'd be more fishing time coming along.
Here's another look. Look at camp a little bit in that peninsula. I guess that's going to go the other direction. I thought I had a better See if I can find a better one. But in any case, sounds like most of the crisis has been averted. So that's good. Pretty wild fighting a fire. I bet you didn't expect to be fighting a fire up there this summer, Trevor.
Well, it was a coincidence that I might have brought a water pump up with me and a bunch of hose.
Well, yeah. Well, this, well, yeah. Well, you probably knew at that point it's been so dry, but it's unreal. So you were saying that that big hill, you said it looked like that big hill was on fire and it was like 30 mile an hour winds and it looked like a city.
So. Yeah, it was pretty wild. I have I took a landscape picture. We'll eventually get one of these pictures on our website with it, that the whole hill was on fire and we took pictures at night and it was amazing. Actually, that hill, and then there's it goes down to a point and then it goes around to another point. That whole area was on fire at one point. You know, we're talking miles, 3 miles maybe of fire.
Man. Well, Mother Nature hasn't been very nice to us this year. I feel like hot, dry fire season in the summer. And if you watched Taz and TV, we'll bring Barry on there, or half a Barry anyway. Well, maybe we'll bring Dan in here too, so we can be, there we go.
That's better.
We've gone through the first two episodes of Taz and TV, the new season of Taz and TV. And for those of you that got to watch it, when we arrived at camp on day one, the camp didn't look like you expected it to look like, did it, guys? And Barry, you can answer this one.
A lot of trees down everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of trees down everywhere. The water was really high. Yeah, it was messy looking.
So what you guys figure, Trevor, you figure it was a like a heavy, wet snow?
Yeah, I think so, like a heavy, wet snow and then basically some big wind or whatnot, you know. It's kind of part of the deal, though. We've been pretty lucky. It's been
For another season, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that.
Out of all the years, that's okay. Out of all the years we've been involved with Taz, and I've never seen that. So, you know, I've been involved with it, I guess, since my first trip up there would have been 05 or 06, so... You know, we've never seen that kind of an issue. Well, heck, that's 16 years, you know. You look at some of these ice storms and things I've had in the past, and especially down east and that. So, you know, like, it's the extreme north, and the weather's extreme as well.
It's strange to think about that because, yeah, there we go. Now we can watch it without sound. Perfect. It's so dry here, and obviously... You got some dry conditions. You got wildfire season going on everywhere right now. But our rivers are so low. In fact, Minnesota just went into some restrictions, some drought restriction, water restrictions because of the drought conditions here this week. And this, because of all that snow, I suppose, and all the runoff. I mean, what do you figure? Taz was up 5-6 feet.
Well, it was definitely over the high water mark that we experienced last year, you know. But then also keep in mind that we had that high water in the spring, but really it's slowly continuing to run off over the course of the season, I found. And basically there was no rain for a couple of months, you know.
Yeah.
So I would say 60 days or 60-something days with no rain. Doesn't matter how high the lakes are if you don't get any rain on shore, especially in that mature jack pine forest. She's bone dry, hey? And then lightning, we had a lot of lightning storms that came over this year with no rain in them, so.
Well, you're always at the mercy of Mother Nature, of course.
Absolutely.
So, episode two, Taz and TV, Trevor, we met Jan in the first episode, of course, but we got to learn a little bit more about the relationship you guys had, and the two of you guys kind of... You know, would you say that the reason you are where you are is because of your relationship with them and the fact that you guys did as much fishing as you did growing up?
Well, absolutely. We both had a passion. You know, I know when I was a kid growing up, what I wanted to be when I grew up always was a conservation officer. And once I took that training, I realized, maybe I don't really want to be a conservation officer. I just want to continue to be in the outdoors more than anything, you know. But Jan was a big part of, I guess, the knowledge gain. And like he said in some of the videos there, that, you know, you're not just a fishing guide. If you work up north, you're a carpenter, you're a bear baiter, you're a hunting guide, you're a fix-it-whatever kind of guy. You have to have many skills to be able to succeed in the north. And, you know, I learned a lot of those skills with Jan over the years, and yeah, we had a lot of fun and did a lot of things, you know.
he's caught a lot of big fish, but after his trip to Taz and Trevor, what did he say to you about the lake trout up there?
Yeah, he's pretty excited. You know, he knows it's a pretty damn special place. There isn't there's not many places around where you could find like that, and he appreciates it, and he sure was appreciative to be able to spend some time and experience it with us.
Has he been trying to get you to go back up there yet?
he doesn't have to say that. I already know. If he had an opportunity, he'll be up there in 2 minutes. Yeah. That's the deal, right?
He's a diehard. We all would. Let's be honest. We all would.
Exactly. Yeah, I can't imagine, me going up and Barry not wanting to come along or not coming along. He'd fly in without me if he could, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Camp Grayling is open, and it'll be open until end of September, Trevor?
Yeah, typically October 1st is what our season is we're going to run to this year. And fishing myself now, I've had an opportunity to get out onto Black Lake and spend some days out there with the guides. And we actually just filmed the TV show up there with another one. I won't do a spoiler alert here, but and we had some fun and seeing the lake. Wow. That's all I could say. It's amazing. The views, the quality of the fishing, the incoming, creek, streams, rivers, which are key for a healthy fishery. It was great. I'm really looking forward to getting more time out there and definitely continuing to move that venture forward. That's for sure.
I'm excited to see more of Black Lake. I haven't seen very much of it, but I'm really excited about Rio and that camp in Rio. Such a neat lake over there and cool place. Grayling, lake trout, huge pike, like 50-inch pike. And, and piles and piles of walleyes that day, fly fishing for walleyes in 2 feet of water. Unreal. Fishcampgrayling.com is the website there. And Barry, you got some whitetail hunts again this fall coming up.
Yeah, you bet. Starting probably November 1st, we'll have 5 weeks of whitetail. And, it seems like I've talked to a few of the guys that have come across already, and they seem to have pretty good experience coming across the border. So hopefully everything stays smooth going and everybody come across pretty ease. So yeah, hopefully it's good.
Yeah. Well, too bad we couldn't get that border open a little bit sooner, like 2 months sooner, but it is what it is. It's where we're at. And we're moving forward. Trailsendoutfitters.com is the website to learn more about Barry's whitetail hunting, bear hunting. And of course he's on Tobin Lake. There's a walleye or two in that lake from what I've, what I've been told. Maybe a couple that are okay sized. Gentlemen, glad you guys made it through the fires up there. Okay. Good luck with everything. And thanks for the time today on the show.
Thanks for bringing us on there, Brett.
And watch the next episode of Taz and TV, by the way. We deal with some storms and some lightning. Watch it Tuesday night, 7 o'clock here or 6 o'clock back there in Saskatchewan on the Taz and Lake Lodge Facebook and YouTube channel.
Devil's Lake is legendary, and this summer has been legendary for walleyes. Don't miss out. Call Haybale Heights Campground and Resort today to book one of their modern cabins on East Bay. The cabins are furnished with a full bathroom, kitchen, and all the amenities like high-speed internet, and are clean following CDC guidelines. Staying at Haybale Heights gives you full access to a private boat launch, fish cleaning station, and beach area. Learn more at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. Plan your trip to legendary Devil's Lake today.
Well, we all understand the importance of introducing the outdoors to more people and bringing kids up in the outdoors and giving them a chance to experience outdoor type activities to get them interested in those activities so that they can have a lifetime of enjoying the same things that you and I do. Now, some of those kids don't always have the same access to those activities. Maybe if you're like me, I grew up in a family that hunted and fished all the time. I had a dad that did it, brothers, cousins. My grandpa got us all into it, of course. Not everybody has those opportunities anymore. So putting on an event for kids to get them introduced to the outdoors is increasingly important. And Dean Krebs is going to join us right now to talk about one of those activities. Dean, how are you doing?
Very good. Very good.
Thanks for coming back on. I think we have you on just about every year to talk about this event that you're doing in Alexandria. It's the Youth Outdoor Activity Day. When is it going to be this year, Dean?
It's going to be Sunday, August 29th. So coming up here in a week and a half out at the Alexandria Shooting Park.
What a perfect place to have it out there. And if I remember correctly, that first year that you guys did it, you had a great turnout, and then the next year it kind of blew you away.
Yeah, well, it kind of blew us away both years, actually. So the first year we have a youth outdoor activity day, you know, what are you hoping for? 50, 100, 150 kids? We had 542. And then you're right, the next year we're well over 1,000. I think we're about 1,200. And yeah, the interest in this has been just been incredible. And now we're expecting 2,500 kids this year.
Talk about some of the events that these kids get to take part in. And we should mention right off the bat, it's completely free for these kids to go to this, right?
Absolutely. We will not let anybody charge for anything out there. You cannot get your wallet out of your pocket. We won't even take donations that day. We survive on donations. That's how we put this thing on. But that day, it's not about money. That day, it's about getting kids involved in the outdoors. And so that's a pretty key piece for us that we want to make sure that we continue on forever. That's one of our founding tenets there is this thing has got to be free.
Why did you start this? Where did the idea come from?
So the idea actually came from, like you, I grew up in a family that hunts and fishes and does all kinds of things like that. And my boys, I got twin 13-year-old boys. And one day the boys came in, one of my boys came into my house and the TV was on. And they had to go to the bathroom really bad. He was probably, well, it was 7 years ago, so about 6 years old. And the TV was like a magnet. I mean, it was just, he had to go to the bathroom so bad, but he just, all of a sudden, it was just like a magnet like this. And it pulled him over there, and he sat down on the couch, and I'm like, wow, if that happens to my kids, how about these kids that do not get an opportunity to take part in some of these activities? We got to do something about that. And so we brought this idea to I'm involved with two conservation organizations, Douglas County Pheasants Forever and Viking Sportsmen, and brought it to the two clubs and says, let's put this on. And it has blown up now, to answer your previous question, 42, 43 different activities for kids to do. And they vary from things like trap shooting, rock climbing. We have a nature trail. We have a casting area for both regular and fly fishing. We have got ATV rides, and just a multitude, everything you could possibly do in the outdoors, in Minnesota, we basically have it. And then, yes, look at there, we've got free lunch. So, every kid who comes there and parents and everybody else gets free lunch and free ice cream. And every kid, we give them a free T-shirt. And, you know, going around the community, it is unbelievable how many times I see these T-shirts, knowing that those kids have got to go out and handle a frog or handle a turtle or go on an ATV ride for the first time or whatever it is. They're actively participating. That's one of my favorite clips here. Watch, it's going to hit him in the face.
That's great.
But they're able to do these things. And even kids that have, you know, are outdoor related kids, they're finding some stuff that they don't get a chance to do. I mean, rock climbing is not probably a big thing in our area, right? But we have a rock climbing wall out there, so kids can go try that out. And, you know, just a lot of varied interests.
What do you think is the favorite event at your event? Favorite activity?
Well, we give away a lot of prizes. So there's the bird houses. We have the kids make bird feeders or bird houses. This year it's bird feeders. We give away a lot of fishing poles and BB guns and bows and arrows. So I would have to say that the fishing rod, where you go out and learn to cast a fishing pole, and then we give away about 1,000 fishing poles.
Wow.
That is probably one of the ones that people just love. I mean, there's a big line there because people just love that one.
I like how you've actually got a bow fishing rig set up there as well. And people can practice shooting a bow out into a little tank with, I don't know, those weren't real fish in there. It didn't look like, but people can practice bow fishing there. It's pretty neat. How many years has this been going on now, Dean?
This is our seventh year.
What have you seen as far as the effects in 7 years of doing this now? Are you seeing repeat kids, or are you seeing kids that are now out there hunting and fishing and are doing it because of this, of attending this event when they were younger?
What a great question. It leads me into one of the things I wanted to say, and that is we did a survey this year. 87% of the kids said that they went fishing because of this event. 70% of the kids said they went hunting because of this event. 63% said that they went camping because of this event.
Cool.
And we are seeing kids now that took part in this and are now coming back to volunteer because it made such a difference in their life.
Oh, outdoor cooking even. How perfect is that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's something I feel like that is such a becoming such a big part of the outdoors for people. I mean, obviously for some, it's always been there. I mean, anytime you go camping, obviously you got to cook over a campfire majority of the time, or some sort of propane stove or whatever. But food is becoming such an important part of outdoor activities. That's pretty neat that you teach people how to cook over a fire there.
Yep. Yep, exactly. That outdoor cooking is also a popular one. Both the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts have done that over the years. I think this year the Girl Scouts are doing it. Here's an interesting one is how to build a fire. And this one demonstrates the need for this. So you can see that these kids are learning how to baton a piece of wood and get little chunks there in order to start the fire. But the people who run this event have said many times that it is appalling how many parents go up and they grab a big log and put a match on it, and they're trying to light a log on fire. They have no clue how to start a fire.
Teaching skills like that, how to build a fire, I mean, that's a pretty essential one in wilderness survival. And not everybody was, you know, in the Boy Scouts or is taking a wilderness survival class. Just teaching some of those basic skills is pretty important, especially for kids.
Yeah, you know, and it's trying to remove a hurdle. You know, people are like, geez, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. But if you can give them some experience in how to do that, they feel a little bit more comfortable going out into the out of doors and go camping and that type of stuff. But if they've never done it and they're facing all these new challenges and with skills they don't have, it can be intimidating. So what we're trying to do is really remove those hurdles, get them introduced. If you look at the recruitment, retention, reactivation model, the introduction is a big piece of that. Is getting people interested in this and then they can move on. And we've got some other programs that we're working on as well to further that so that they can take part in things after our event as well.
This is at the Alexandria Shooting Park. It's been there every year, right?
Yep.
That's a great place to have that. And then you obviously have some people that help you put this on. And then you also have some sponsorships that are available.
Yeah. So we have a committee of people that put this on. They're a dedicated group that has worked really hard on doing this and getting it all lined up. And we strive to be as professional as we can and make it really easy for people to do things. As we alluded to earlier, you know, we survive on donations, and the local business community, the statewide business community, even national sponsors have really stepped up to make this happen and introduce these kids to things that they don't normally get to do.
And tell us again when this is going to take place, what the hours are, et cetera.
Sunday, August 29th, Alex Shooting Park. There'll be signs up, but you can just Google Alex Shooting Park. It'll pop up. It's real easy to find. And then the hours are 10 to 4. You can come and go as you please. There's nothing that is strict that you got to be at anything at any point in time. So, you know, come and hang out and do it for a while and leave when you need to, or come when you need to. It's wide open.
And who can be a part of this?
Anybody can be a part of this. And one thing I do ask, if you're going to come and you're going to bring your son or daughter or your grandchild or something like that, find a couple friends. This is free. It doesn't cost you anything. Load up that car with kids and bring them all there, and they're going to have a ball.
All right. Sunday, August 29th, youthoutdooractivityday.org is the website. Dean Krebs, good luck with the event this year, and thanks for the time today on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having us and getting this word out. We really want to pull some kids in.